The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Today in Kabul, a female cat has more freedoms than a woman. A cat may go sit on her front stoop and feel the sun on her face. She may chase a squirrel into the park. A squirrel has more rights than a girl in Afghanistan today because the public parks have been closed to women and girls by the Taliban. A bird may sing in Kabul, but a girl may not, and a woman may not in public. This is extraordinary. This is a suppression of the natural law. I feel that the Taliban, since they've issued over 100 edicts in Afghanistan, stripping women and girls of their education and employment, their freedom of expression and movement, they have effectively incarcerated half their population.
And that was Meryl Streep speaking at the UN General Assembly in a bid to get the world leaders to focus on the plight of Afghan women and girls under the Taliban. Now, one of those women is Pashtana Durrani, who's been exiled from Afghanistan since the Taliban seized control of Kabul in 2021. Pashtana founded a digital school network in Afghanistan to educate young girls under the Taliban. I spoke with Pashtana earlier, and I started by asking her why she decided to set up her online school within Afghanistan.
So I am from Afghanistan, and the reason we started in Afghanistan was because I come from rural tribal regions of Afghanistan, and schools were never a possibility there. So the next sensible thing for me to do was to find a solution to learning that is beyond buildings, and the digital network was just that. And then post-Taliban, that was the only lifeline that my girls could have. So I made sure that we continue doing what we do.
Now, what about the availability of technology to access the digital network?
That is a huge gap. There is a huge gap when it comes to digital divide and digital gap between young girls and young boys, but also like the internet gap, which is between anyone and everyone, but also especially young girls because they are not allowed to be on internet. But most importantly, you also have to realize that I still have students who come to our AI club and they take their cell phones from their father or their brother, and their parents make sure that the internet is available and is stable for them to use that. So yes, there's a huge divide, but there's also like efforts that we don't tend to see in other places.
Now, this was a very worthy project within the tribal areas of Afghanistan, where, as you said, regular schooling was not possible. But then when did the Taliban take notice of what you were doing and disapprove of it?
Oh, right away. I think it was in 2021 where we were working with 18 public schools and they had to shut down almost all of them. And the only we used to work with high school. So anything beyond grade six was not permissible. So all the people that we had worked with, all the resources that we had invested in almost 7,000 students, they were all closed down in 2021.
And what did you do then?
Oh, the first thing I did was start a first secret school, an underground network in Kandahar. And that was almost around 100 students. And we employed our teachers in our network. And then we grew. Yeah.
So when did you have to leave Afghanistan?
I was forced into exile when in 2021, October. Where I was told that if I stay, I'm going to pose danger to my family and my friends and my staff members. And I was told by my own staff members that it's important for me to leave if I really want to continue my work. So I had to leave, yeah.
Now, how does the network continue its work remotely away from Afghanistan?
Well, Pat, I'm happy to report that as of this morning, we have 5,300 young girls who have walked to school in Afghanistan, age 13 to 18, and they have studied from grade 7 to grade 12, all the STEM subjects that you would find in a school. And we have around 134 teachers who are employed, who get paid through us and who could teach in today's Afghanistan. So that's the network that we have built. We are across 24 provinces right now. And I'm hoping that that's a good start, yeah.
Now, the potential is enormous. Obviously, there are so many more girls who are denied access to education. But what would happen to either a student or their parents if they were discovered using your network?
I just had my coworker released day before yesterday. He was in prison for almost 5 months, and another coworker, she was imprisoned for 6 months. And it has been a horrible half of the year. It's not just you teaching and learning. It's seen as something that is radical and rebellious against the decree of the supreme leader. And you're put, I was talking to my coworker. He was tortured for 15 days just so he could confess and say, yes, he used to work for a Christian church or a political network that was destabilizing Afghanistan. So literally they would push you to bounds where you have to confess to wrong things. Just because you were teaching or you were discovered in that.
Now, there has been an arrest warrant issued by the International Criminal Court against Taliban leaders because they are thought to be guilty of the persecution of women and girls. Will that have any impact at all?
I don't think so. I think the reality is they are still coddled by the international community. There are still back-channel talks with them through the current new DC administration. And then at the same time, in Qatar, the last working group on Afghan Women Rights Committee by the with the UN has been it was shut down a few months ago. So I personally don't think it's going to have as much as impact, but I think it's great that international institutions are taking notice of it and are doing their best and are not waiting for other countries to take the lead on this.
Now, can you remind us of how restricted girls and women are now currently in Afghanistan?
I was talking to my staff the other day, and we're planning a graduation ceremony, and we have to run 4 security checks. We have to confirm it with almost 200 parents. And then we can celebrate what is a graduation ceremony for a student. So you cannot go out, but if you're seen out, you cannot carry your books with you because if you're arrested or checked. But if you are checked and arrested and you don't have a book on you, then what would be your excuse? Because you're not out in public. You're not supposed to be out in public in the first place. So imagine it's as removed as a woman that you can, as a person, you can be in a society. You're not supposed to be seen, heard, lived or noticed in a public society.
So how do women, for example, if they want to go shopping, how do they go? How do they have to be accompanied by a male relative?
Even with that, people don't tend to talk about it. Even with chaperones, their chaperones are beaten up sometimes. They are threatened. They're told, why are you out with your women? Why are you out with a young woman? I have multiple instances where I've been told that we cannot go out with our father or our brother, even if we have a chaperone, because they're bullied with us. And they're told, and every time, so for example, if I go out with my brother and I'm not hiding my face the right way or not wearing my scarf the right way or not wearing the black color burqa, my brother will be beaten instead of me. So imagine that, like your brothers are or your family male members are terrorized for you. Yeah.
Now, recently we heard something that sounds absolutely ridiculous, that girls and women are not allowed to sing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. They're not allowed to sing. The most ridiculous for me is when it turned out to be extremely Islamophobic was they cannot recite Quran in public or in a social space. And that is so ridiculous for me because this is also Islamophobic, and nobody has an idea that the regime that claims that they are the most holy and sacred and Islam first ideology are the most Islamophobic.
Now, the problem here is that there will be a whole generation of young girls who won't get the education they're well capable of enjoying if they got the opportunity. Going forward, what impact is that going to have on society in general?
I mean, you have to understand right now, Afghanistan has a complete current collapse of the healthcare industry and healthcare system. So if you go to regional spaces, especially in the south, you won't be able to find a clinic that is fully functioning. Apart from that, the educational system is collapsed because you really don't have teachers who are graduating. So in the past 3 years, you're supposed to have graduates of midwives and teachers every year. We don't have that for the past 3 years. Our population is growing, but our women and our need to meet that demand is not growing. More and more people are going to Iran and Pakistan, and they're being abused as refugees and being discriminated against. So this is not just a generation that is going to be abused in their own homes. This is a generation that is also going to be abused in regional countries, in neighboring countries, because Afghan refugees don't have that same worth that other countries do.
Now, you talk about healthcare and the collapse of healthcare. Presumably, women patients are not allowed to be seen by male doctors. But if there's no education for women, where are we to find female doctors in Afghanistan?
I was reading this one piece where the Talib in Helmand said, if she is going through pain in child labor, or if she needs healthcare in labor, how did women do it like 100 years ago from now? Or how did women do it in back in the day? If they could do it, women now should do it. So I don't think their priority is really to have doctors for women or care about women going through pain or care about the fact that women are half of the society and deserve to be treated like human beings.
It seems so ridiculous to the rest of the world because there was a time when Afghanistan, it was a mixed society, obviously, but there was a very educated class of women, as there would be in any Western society. But equally in tribal areas, there were women who never had those opportunities. It looks like Afghanistan is moving back the centuries rather than embracing any kind of modernity.
Oh, big time. See, I come from conservative tribal areas. My grandmother was home educated. So even before she died, my mother would tell me that she would recite the Quran and the Persian poetry when she was like almost bedridden. But she was home schooled and she came from the most conservative place in Afghanistan. My point is, yes, there were parts where they were conservative. There were parts where they were very modern. There were parts where women would go out to Turkey and Syria and study and come back and practice law, medicine, journalism. But the reality is right now, Afghan women is seen as this victim who doesn't have a lot to change and who has always been the victim. But in reality is we're an ancient country with 5,000-year-old history. And in that 5,000-year-old history, almost 3,000 years of it is led by women and has always been something that the women were always at the forefront. So they fought against inequality, illiteracy, injustices. And now the current regime thinks they know more about my history and my culture than I do.
Can you explain to us how men feel about this? Obviously, there are those within the regime and those who feel they can gain by being part of the regime. Those men will be happy to carry on with the repression of the Taliban. But what about other men, the fathers of girls, the brothers of girls, who know there is another way?
I think it's so simple, but also yet so complicated. Women have given, like, sacrificed their fathers, brothers, husbands, sons to 40 years long war, not 45. And now they're at a place where they are scared for their male family members. And their male family members, they need nothing more than their women in schools and in workplaces. I was reading this paper by Afghan Analyst Network that was published about how men feel about women and their education. And this is what they said. A tailor in Helmand said, women should be allowed to work and study because that is Islamic. That's how our culture is, and that's how we are supposed to be. And more than 90% of the men felt the same way in that paper. And I thought to myself, I was like, these are just normal people who are tailors, who are shopkeepers, who just go out by their day. But they believe that women should be in school. So they are tired as people. That's why when people ask me, why don't they rebel or why don't they fight? They're fighting in their own significant ways by sending their daughters to secret schools, by taking care of them, by paying for their internet, by ensuring that their girls still get to learn, even in today's suffocating Afghanistan. Yeah.
What will it take to bring about a regime change? And it has to come from within because we can't see the Russians, the Americans or anyone else embarking on a military adventure in Afghanistan in the near future. So what will it take to bring about change?
See, the land of Afghanistan is sacred, and it's sacred to Afghans, And I would never want any other country, be it Russia, America, or any other country, to invade us, or have, even when they did, that was wrong. The best thing we can expect right now is either for leadership to change within the current regime to a more modern one, or for them to realize that this is not the way forward, and they cannot self-isolate from the world and still expect to get all the carrots that they're expecting right now.
Is there any criticism at all from other regional powers, your neighbors, about what is going on within Afghanistan?
My regional countries are mostly Muslim countries. And I remember being at a conference where the regional countries were like, oh, Taliban are brothers. And I thought to myself, I was like, then probably Afghan Muslim women are not your sisters if you call the oppressor your brothers. So there's always this shy criticism of the Taliban. They're always seen as brother in hand, people who fought for anti-imperialist ideology. So it's very complicated, but also at the same time, it's expected out of the regional countries to stand up for Afghan women because they are, we share the same belief, same faith and religion and region. I wish they had more backbone and would do that.
So finally, the rest of the world, I mean, how much does Afghanistan trade with the rest of the world? Can the rest of the world bring any pressure on the regime to bring about internal change in terms of women's and girls' rights?
I think personally, it should be the Muslim countries taking the lead. They should be the ones putting on the accountability. Qatar should be the one leading this because Qatar put us in this mess in the first place and has been lobbying for them for over a decade and a half now. So I think Qatar should be the one like manning up and doing this. And then apart from that, other Muslim countries that have been supporting Afghanistan when it came to the Soviet war or even in other instances, I think it's time for them to support Afghan women in education and workspace and in other spaces. So it should always be the Muslim countries first leading that. And then apart from that, the Afghan community, I think the Afghan community and diaspora that is in exile should be brought into the conversation. Like we're being talked about, but nobody is talking to us. So it's also very important to be engaged with that. And then last but not the least, I think the international community, if it's really committed, should stop tweeting about it, but rather open a series of dialogues where it can actually be talked about.
Pashtana Durrani, Afghan feminist activist, founder of the Digital Education Network. Pashtana, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.